Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, everybody, to the Raiders Talk Podcast. I'm your host, NBC Sports Bay Area Raiders Insider Scott Baer, and defensive end Max Crosby is this week's feature guest. Many expected the fourth-round draft pick to be a situational pass rusher in 2019, but he has become a three-down player integral to the Raiders' defensive effort. We discussed his rapid rise up the depth chart, the relentless effort that has become his signature, and we also delve into his backstory to explain how he became so good at maximizing golden opportunities. My Max Crosby one-on-one starts after our weekly Raiders discussion with NBC Sports reporter Josh Schrock, where he and I set the stage for the Raiders' playoff prospects inside the division and out after two straight victories, and also how realistic it is that the silver and black could surprise a ton of people and qualify for the postseason. That discussion on the state of the 2019 Raiders heading down the stretch starts right now. Josh, we find ourselves in a very interesting spot for the Oakland Raiders, coming off of two straight wins over a five-day span, first against the Detroit Lions, then against the Los Angeles Chargers, and as on a Thursday night, and as everything flushed out over the following Sunday, the Raiders are right in the middle of this thing. As a matter of fact, they're just a half game back of Kansas City in the AFC West, and they are clear of the Chargers by one game, just by the nature of their victory over them. And they are currently the AFC's seventh seed behind Pittsburgh, one of three teams at 5-4. Tennessee is just a half game back at 5-5. And what all that means, in short, Josh, is Raiders are right in the thick of this playoff hunt, but they're also in the thick of the AFC West hunt as well.
Yeah, I mean, after Tennessee somehow beat the Chiefs, the Raiders only a half game back, and I think a lot of people thought that once Pat Mahomes got back, everything would kind of magically go back together for the Chiefs. And while he's really good and continues to be one of the MVP the possible MVPs of this league, their run defense, the Chiefs, is really bad, and Tennessee ran it all over them. And they get the Chargers this week, and I don't know, the Chargers might be dead, but I mean, they definitely will be dead if they lose on Monday night. So they get a tough game there, and then they get the Raiders after a bye. So the Raiders are right in this. The Chiefs are horribly banged up on the offensive line. So I don't expect the Chiefs to just all of a sudden string together five straight wins and call the day.
And the Raiders really have a two-pronged path to the postseason, because while they're in the thick of it in the AFC West, and I mean, let's be honest, they John Gruden wants to beat his buddy Andy Reid within the division. They get another game in Oakland, if that's the case. The wild card is a path maybe where you can have a couple more missteps. And they're right in the thick of it. Again, right now they are the seventh seed, but there's plenty of times to work tiebreakers or to edge in front of Pittsburgh. They already have a head-to-head advantage over the Indianapolis Colts, who are also at 5-4 and kind of slipping. And the team underneath them, Tennessee, run by Ryan Tannehill, is a team that the Raiders will face at home with a golden opportunity to own a head-to-head tiebreaker against them. And the way the schedule is panning out, I mean, this is setting up for the Raiders to control their own destiny in every possible way. They can go to Kansas City if they win the next two and take the division lead. If they take care of business against teams around them in the AFC, they have a backup plan, which is the wild card. They're right in the middle of all of this. And as like, and opposed to asking you, are you surprised that they're here? It's that, can they sustain this? Can they see this thing out to the end?
I think so, just because the path in front of them, as you said, they're through the gauntlet, right? They made it through the road trip, past the Lions and Chargers at 5-4. Now you got the Bengals, the Jets, tough game against Kansas City, but Jacksonville, Tennessee, very beatable. Brandon Allen led Broncos, also very beatable to end the season. So it's all right there. They can stay in it. I mean, the injuries on defense, attrition is going to be an issue, but the path is there in front of them. And I think you talk about the Steelers, who they have the tiebreaker over the Raiders, but I think the Bills are going to come back down to earth a little bit.
Right.
They get Dallas, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and New England still left on the schedule. Those are probably four losses for the Bills. So it's all right there.
And it's weird because we've mentioned the word playoffs on this podcast before, and it's always sort of been like a maybe. And now it's like, well, it's possible. We're maybe not at the probable stage yet, but I think that we're working towards it. And let's break down the state of this team right now. And defensively, as you brought up, they have weathered a ton of injuries. They just lost Carl Joseph to injured reserve. He has a foot injury. We don't know the exact severity, but he is, in fact, done for the season. And while fans may kind of say, well, he's not a superstar, he was playing his best football the last couple weeks, starting to come into his own in the back, and he's one of a large number of presumptive starters back in August and September who are no longer available to the Raiders. Carl Joseph, Jonathan Abram, Vontaze Burfict, Arden Key was going to be a key role player, and Gerrion Conley has been traded. Now, we can debate about whether their replacements are better or worse, but this is a defense that has gone through a lot of transition, and you cannot help but wonder, if you're a pessimist in terms of the Raiders making the playoffs, is this Joseph injury, or maybe the next one, going to be the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back, right? That finally this defense that gives up tons of yards just can't handle another injury, despite the fact that they've weathered so many so well so far.
Yeah, no doubt. I think when you look at Carl Joseph, like you said, maybe not a star name, but he's been playing really well, and he's just kind of getting the hang of Paul Gunther's defense this year, and especially over the last three or four games. I thought he'd been playing really, really well. I mean, not just the game-sealing interceptions the past two games, but just overall, his communication in the back end has been good. And I think the injuries on defense are so make the next two games very important against the Bengals and Jets, because you have to win those games just in case there's another injury, because now you're relying on DJ Swearinger and maybe a guy like Deion Jordan to come in the defensive line. You're relying on guys you're bringing in off the street to play really big roles and not just complimentary roles.
Yeah, and since you brought it up, you were in Deion Jordan's, you know, kind of a press, not a conference, but you talked to him in the Raiders locker room on Wednesday. What was your takeaway from speaking with him? And while he may not make an immediate impact as in Sunday versus Cincinnati, but this is a guy with tons of talent who just really has never lived up to it in the pros.
Yeah, never lived up to it. He's had some PED issues. He has ADHD and had an issue with the Adderall waiver. The sense I got is he's happy to be in Oakland. He turned down a couple other opportunities to stay in the Bay Area where he's been training. And he talked to Mike Mayock. Loves everything the Raiders have in the building, the support system they're willing to give him, like they've given Darren Waller. And he's ready to just work hard and do whatever it takes to finally to try and realize his potential, which is what John Gruden is hoping the Raiders can get out of him. Because like you said, he's a guy, top three pick, tons of talent. He's in great shape. And if he can even be what he was in Seattle in 2017, That's going to be a big lift.
He was pretty good then. Yeah. I was going to bring up 2017. He had, I believe, 5 sacks and kind of surged, and he's a better run defender than maybe, you know, people stereotypically think. And he could definitely help them off the edge, where they're pretty reliant on Cleland Furrow, Max Crosby, and Benson Mayoa. Now Josh Morrow may be added to that mix, but that's more for run defense. But this pass rush has been better. 10 sacks over the last 3 games, 5 against Phillip Rivers. Ryan Finley isn't going to win a track meet, but they have some tough quarterbacks ahead. Realistic ceiling, though, right? Like the Raiders' pass rush is getting good press right now. Is it something that can be sustained, though? I think it's interesting that Cleland Furrow, you actually talked to him, you know, you wrote a story on him right after that Chargers game as well. Can we see some ascension here where this pass rush, which has been the missing link, if that thing gets fired up, I think the outlook on defense changes drastically.
No doubt. I mean, it all starts with them stopping the run, as you talked to Benson Mayoa today, and he kind of alluded to that. And if the D-line continues to be able to stop the run, or at least put up a fight like that against the Chargers, then they can get after it. I don't think, if you talk to Cleveland Furrell, I don't think he'd say he did anything different. I think he's just they're keeping at it. They're getting more comfortable in the system. Life as an NFL player, he's kind of gaining that weight back. And I think that him, Max Crosby, Benson Mayoa can all continue to be really effective, especially against lines like the Bengals and the Jets coming up and the Chiefs that are banged up and kind of porous.
And Cleland plays inside some. Now, he doesn't play 40% of his snaps inside or anything like that, but he's being asked to do some things that he didn't do a ton of at Clemson in terms of playing inside. Maybe that's better for his speed or what have you. I always hate to question coaches, but he played on the edge mostly because they needed him to against the Chargers. And I think that just kind of allows him to stay in his wheelhouse, right? Whether it's self-imposed or actually there, he's got the pressure of the world on his shoulders right now as the number 4 pick. How many times have we said he didn't pick himself there, right? But I still don't think, knowing him as I do, which is at a very base, kind of superficial level, he seems like a guy that really wants to do well, a high-character guy, and he wants to live up to that big paycheck, to that high draft status. Maybe just let him be on the edge. Maybe he's not, you know, the second coming of, you know, or even Justin Houston, or, you know, so I'm blanking on like Von Miller, right? Maybe he's not the second coming of him, right? But at least put him in a spot where he's comfortable and let him play to things that he knows. He was always productive in college. Why not just stick to that, especially if you're getting enough production inside? You've got Mo Hurst, who's a decent pass rusher. You got PJ Hall in there. I'm just theorizing here. Maybe just leave him on the outside for the next couple games anyway against lesser competition and see what kind of confidence that he's able to build if he can start producing.
Yeah, when I talked to Cleland, it was before the Texans game, in the week leading up when we'd had the kind of, he's been playing a lot inside talk. John Gruden talks about factor grades, and it's not all about sacks. And Cleland just told me, you know, hey, I want to be great. I'm working at being great. I'm doing whatever's asked of me. But I think you could kind of sense that, I mean, he just kind of wanted to do what he's used to, which is what you're talking about. And he got to do that against the Chargers, and he was really good. And I think that was part of what led to his little post-game short press conference where he answered one question and said, I'm good. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, it's tough because if you look back at a lot of the headlines and what's been written about him, including what you wrote about him, it's just kind of explaining the difficult circumstances that he's in with, as you mentioned, the weight loss and the stress of being the number 4 pick and being asked to do so many different things. And that's kind of been the tenor of what has been written about him locally, I think. But the thing that I think we often forget is that his social media feeds and are flooded, and his Instagram posts are flooded with fans maybe with negative comments or not in the stat sheet or something like that, that he starts kind of associating, maybe if our names are involved, that he just starts associating with everybody is against me. Because I think you and I have talked, how did one of the nicest guys on the planet kind of get jaded so quickly. And maybe that's how, you know, maybe it's just one of those things where the weight of all the social media stuff, plus the fact he's putting pressure on himself, maybe he wants to perform better, you know, all that's kind of weighing on him. And then you get something like, you know, and he didn't, you know, piss a fit or pitch a fit or anything like that. But he definitely kind of was standoffish, kind of more than we've ever seen from him.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, you know, I've been reading maybe just the headlines of what's been said. And like you said, the Twitter mentioned saying, you know, I'm a bust, I can't do this. And I went out and showed you guys I could do it. And I don't think, I mean, you and I both, we believe in him. Like you said, maybe he doesn't become Von Miller, but I think he's a good player. And he came into a situation where the D-line, you know, he's been asked to do so much because of the lack of depth and, you know, I guess, you know, overall talent. I mean, there's some good players, but he's been kind of the focus of offensive lines trying to block him because he's the big name.
Yeah, and for as much as we talk about this defense, right, the possibility for improvement, the possibility for struggles due to injury, it's a real teeter-totter, right? It can kind of go either way, but the offense has been pretty steady. They are almost take it to the bank for 24-ish points every single week. That's how it's been the last few weeks, even when they lost to Houston. And, okay, like we know Josh Jacobs is awesome, and the offensive line is playing well, and the question marks at wide receiver. But Derek Carr is really finding a nice groove for himself. The yards per attempt are high. The efficiency, the quarterback rating, the lack of interceptions. It seems to me like he's operating John Gruden's offense as he wants it to be operated. And that is the highest compliment you can give from a guy who's such a detail-oriented coach.
Yeah, we've talked about it all year. I think year two, he's just gotten so much more comfortable in the playbook and feeling what Coach Gruden wants. And now Derek talked about it a little bit today. With defenses trying to take away Darren Waller, he just has the confidence in guys like Hunter Renfro to get open and make the plays when, you know, a guy that he targets in Waller a lot is covered. And Derek's really just pulling all the right strings at the moment.
And this defense needs to continue to progress. The offense needs to continue the way that it's going as they head towards kind of a new spot. Josh, they haven't been favorites very much at all outside of that season opener. They were even underdogs against the Chargers at home. I can't remember the Lions spread, but bottom line, they're 10.5-point favorites, or at least that's what the line was against the Bengals. They should be road favorites against the Jets, you would think, with the way that the Jets are going. And my point is, after being scrappy underdogs and scratching and clawing for wins, now we're into the you got to get the W, like take care of business portion of their schedule. And that big game against Kansas City, which hopefully we can get the bosses to send you to, because that should be an awesome one, is that you look at it and you think, in order for that game to mean anything, that they really have to show up and do what is required of them over the next 2 weeks. How are they going to handle this new role as favorite and guys who are flat out expected to win?
I think they're going to handle it fine just because the tenor of the team seems to be like, hey, we've taken on so much water, we've been through so much adversity with so many injuries, we can't afford to, you know, be kind of strutting our stuff after a win against the Chargers with the Bengals coming in, because, you know, as John Gruden and Derek Carr will tell you, they're professional athletes and they're really talented, even though they're 0-9. So if you sleepwalk, you can lose. So I think the team's dialed in to that, and they know that the next two games are really big, because, you know, then you're 7-4 and you're going to go to Kansas City with a chance to take the lead in the division in December, which is, you know, a place I don't think anyone really thought they'd be in to start the season.
But, like, Gruden and Carr can talk about that, right, and say the records don't matter, and we look at the film. But, I mean, we can say that the Bengals stink, and we can say that Rich Gannon was right when he said this might be one of the worst teams that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. No offense to Ryan Finley and, you know, all the guys on the Bengals, Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins are pros, but there doesn't seem to be a concerted effort in Cincinnati right now to really try too hard to get better. They have a lot of holes to fill, and they're hoping to do that with the top pick in the draft. So I mean, like it's a game. The Raiders are favored by 10.5 for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a mess up. Vegas doesn't make mistakes, so the Raiders should roll because the Bengals are very bad.
Yeah, and you know, and that's one of those things when we were doing this pod to start the 3-game homestand, that a 3-game winning streak was right there for the taking, and they've done the hard parts. If they can finish this thing with 3 straight, you build some real momentum. You get one of those top tier team winning streaks. I mean, just because the Patriots won what 8 in a row doesn't mean that they didn't get to play the Dolphins in there and the Steelers at their worst and a bunch of other teams that made it easier.
And that,
now
that club in Washington, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this is an opportunity for the Raiders to win games that they're supposed to win, create a little bit of a cushion as much as they can against teams that like that they should beat. And look, they're going to lose one of these games on the stretch. Kansas City, Jacksonville could be resurgent with Nick Foles. That there's a lot of opportunity, so you have to take advantage of the W's when they're sitting at your feet. So, Josh, thank you so much for breaking down state of the Raiders. Again, they are legitimately right in the thick of the playoff hunt, division, and wild card. Impressive stuff from John Gruden's crew. Thank you so much for breaking it down. And everybody, stay tuned. Great conversation with Max Crosby coming up. If you're a football fan, you need to check out this new game called Sunday Night 7 on the NBC Sports Predictor app. There's no reason not to play. It's totally free and has $2 million in guaranteed cash prizes this season, with $100,000 up for grabs every week. Just make 7 predictions about what will happen in Sunday Night Football for a chance to win some serious money. Download the NBC Sports Predictor app or head to NBCSports.com/predictor right now to make your Sunday Night 7 picks. So how good does it feel on Thursday night? The Raiders beat a division rival on national television. You play a huge role in that victory. You're in Philip Rivers' face all night after that exhausting performance. Like, what was that feeling right then?
At that moment, you know, I was just super exhausted, like, yeah, you said, you know, and relieved. You know, it was a big win. And you know, it was a short week, so we went out there as a unit and did some good things. But you know, it's on to Cincinnati now.
When you look at how your season's gone, really the more opportunities you get, the more of an impact that you make. It starts in week 4, right? When you got a chance to play every down. And what do you attribute that to? Is it more about the opportunity that you got or the confidence that you gained from it? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, at first it was a mixture. You know, I wasn't getting as many snaps early on, and I was still getting back from my hand injury.
Right.
And you know, it's the NFL now, so you're learning, and you don't know exactly what to expect, and you're trying to just, you know, learn the game a little bit. So, you know, I feel like it worked out perfect. You know, it took a few weeks to get, you know, finally get things rolling. But, yeah, like you said, you know, I've been playing more, and it just allows me to, you know, get in a rhythm, you know, not worry about getting, you know, when I'm going to be on the field or not, just being able to go and play and just have as much fun as I can with it.
How did you feel like you had to play catch up because of the hand happening when it did early in the preseason and losing some time? Or did you feel like it was all pretty natural once you were allowed back on the field?
Yeah, you know, I didn't think it was as bad as I expected. You know, I've never been out with an injury. I haven't missed any games for an injury my whole career, basically. So at first, you know, I was a little worried, but our strength staff did a great job of, you know, keeping me in shape and staying in the weight room. So when I came back, I was ready to go.
I think it's easy for fans. You can look in a box score. You go down the sack line, right, and circle it, and that's what they look at for a defensive lineman. But John Gruden, and I'm sure everywhere inside of this building next to us, there's a lot to it. You know, the run defense, the impacting plays, whether it's batted passes or pressuring quarterbacks into errant throws. You got Philip Rivers, you know, to do that a couple different times in that game. When you look at the all-around you know, performance, how do you and Coach Buckner look at it? Do you feel like progress is being made, not just in terms of sacks, but in terms of being that complete three down defensive lineman?
Yeah, you know, Coach Buck thought we had a good week, and I thought we played well. But yeah, just like you're saying, the stats and stuff like that, you know, sacks come in bunches. So, you know, they'll be there. I just got to keep playing, and, you know, I'm not really thinking about how many sacks am I going to try to get and all that, because if you're thinking too much and trying, you know, get sack happy, you're going to, you know, do some things that, you know, Coach Buck's not going to be happy about. So he says always just do your assignment and go 100 miles an hour. So that's what I've been trying to do, and that's what, you know, the D-line's been doing.
You know, it's crazy. You're playing 70 snaps per game. We're talking about this multifaceted, complete games that you're putting forward. You go back to the draft profile, right? You're a small school guy. You're not strong enough.
Yeah.
Apparently they didn't watch tape up there because you couldn't play the run, right? You're only a situational pass rusher, even though your tackles for loss were through the roof.
Yeah.
Do you feel like all this play, all right, like that's shed off your shoulders, or do you feel like you had to work against some of that stuff maybe that was a perception that wasn't reality?
I don't know. If you, like, before the draft, there's so many stories and stuff coming out, and obviously I'm trying to see where I'm at, where people are thinking, and agents telling me things, and, you know, everybody has their opinion. But at the end of the day, you know, I had production, you know, the last 2 years of college, a lot of it. And, you know, when I came to the NFL, I knew I can, you know, they break down the little, smallest little pieces, like stuff that doesn't really matter at the end of the day. And, you know, I just use that as another chip on my shoulder. And I just, you know, I'm very confident in my ability. So I really don't try to listen to the outside noise. I just do what I do, and, you know, it's been working.
Normally when somebody comes in as part of a draft class, it's from positions from everywhere. But you've had the real benefit of going through this rookie experience with somebody from your position group, a guy lining up on the opposite edge in Cleveland Furl, right?
Yeah.
What has that experience been like? Has that kind of bonded you guys together somewhat, just that you guys are going through it at the same time? You're playing three downs together.
For sure. No, definitely. You know, we roomed together in camp. We roomed together in rookie mini camp. Mm-hmm. And that really helped out, just bonding, you know, together, even though I wasn't the biggest fan of being his roommate.
Yeah.
But he probably wasn't the same. You know, he probably wasn't a fan of me either. But, you know, we bonded. He's like a brother to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that helps out a lot. And, you know, seeing him, obviously, Thursday, have a huge game after all the outside noise, mm-hmm. all that, it was awesome to see. And, you know, me and him, we just want to keep getting better. And we always, you know, if I'm having a down day, he's trying to help me out. If he's down, I'm trying to help him out. So, you know, I feel like that works hand in hand. And, you know, it was really helpful having him during the process.
And Cleveland comes from a huge program, Clemson,
yeah.
right? Nothing bigger. You come from a smaller one, but how did going to Eastern Michigan, how did that shape you as a player, as a person, that college experience that you went through?
Yeah, you know, they were my only offer. And, my, you know, my goal coming out of high school was, you know, I wanted to play D1. So they were the one to offer me, and I was like, all right, I'm going no matter what. My mom was, you know, all upset and all that, and it is what it is. You know, I wanted that opportunity, and it's just like, you know, this year I got an opportunity. I knew whoever was going to take me was going to be the right fit, and they believed in me, and they're letting me, you know, play my game. So, you know, being a small school guy, you know, we're still playing SEC teams and Big Ten teams, just not as much. So, you know, it's always, like, for me, I feel like I've always been slept on and overlooked, but you know, that's just more motivation.
That wasn't part of the script here, but it's a great point that you've learned to take advantage of all the opportunities that you have, because they may be fewer than somebody from a bigger program, but how you got there, the story, like, literally got your scholarships, fascinating to me. That you're from Michigan, you spent your junior high and high school years in Texas. You used to make these 1,200-mile trips back to Michigan. But one trip, you end up going straight to the Eastern Michigan Prospects Day, right? Kind of take me from there, that you really had to go impress them a little bit.
Yeah, so I was doing a few camps before that. Mm-hmm. And I knew Eastern had interest. They were sending a lot of letters and stuff like that. So I knew it was really important. And, you know, we made that trip every year. Me, my mom, my brother, sister, we'd drive all the way to Michigan. So, I drove up there. I got there super early in the morning, had to get all the sign up and stuff. And it was, you know, these camps that I was doing before were like 45 minutes. You run a 40, right. Do a couple drills, you're out. And I went to Eastern's and I was there for like 6 hours on the field, doing tight end, doing DN, doing one-on-ones, doing a bunch of stuff. So, you know, I knew I had to kill it. And they ended up offering me and my best friend right after the camp. So it was crazy. You know, it was awesome experience. And, you know, I felt like it was a perfect fit for me.
And you learned a bit because your brother Miles went through the recruiting experience.
Yep.
Was a DB at SMU for a couple years. He's in a different line of work though now, a pretty popular, pretty famous one.
having Miles there, I looked up to him always. You know, he was the first person that started playing football in my family, and I was at every practice before I was even able to play. And then, you know, I never looked back since. So having him in my corner, seeing how hard he works, that was just an inspiration to me. And I always wanted to be a D1 player just like my brother. So you know, it was awesome having him there. And now obviously he's on to other things, and Calvin Klein doing some things. But yeah, you know, he's doing great. And you know, he's still a super hard worker no matter what field he's in. So you know, it was awesome having him and my dad, you know, in my corner, always pushing me and helping me.
We saw it a little bit on Hard Knocks, some on social media. You've got some game in terms of hip hop wins. Yeah. I know that Darren Waller has an album out. When's yours? When can we expect it?
Yeah, that's funny you said Darren Waller, because we're working on something.
Really?
In the off season, we're definitely gonna work on some stuff and get some songs out. But you're gonna have to wait for that one. It's gonna be nice.
You gonna have one with explicit lyrics, and then and then, you know, like one for the kids?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
You know, you're pretty busy right now with everything kind of football related, and you're halfway through the season. You're 5-4.
Yep.
Every goal that you could want as a team is set out in front of you. I mean, what's the mindset of this team as we, you know, turn into November and things, you know, you can, maybe you guys don't dream about playoffs, but the fans sure do. You know, like, what's the mindset of this team as we start heading down towards this, and you're right in the mix of the division, of the playoff picture, everything?
Yeah, you know, the first step to get into a Super Bowl is make the playoffs. And, you know, everybody on this team wants to make the playoffs. So that's the one thing on our mind, is just, you know, take it one day at a time, you know, and take it one week at a time. So, you know, we went through a long stretch of being on the road, all the off-season noise and all that. It seemed like we were in a hectic situation, but everybody in the building was focused on one goal. So, you know, there was distractions and this and that, but it made us closer. And, you know, you can definitely see it on Sundays. We're having fun with it. We're flying around, having a blast. So we're just going to, continue doing that every week.
And one last thing, and thanks for the time.
Absolutely.
How do you grade your rookie season, or how will you grade it in February, let's say, when it ends, right? Or January? Are you going to look at stats and say, that means I did something well? How do you evaluate it?
You know, obviously we're halfway through the season right now, so there's a lot more football to be played.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like I've done some good things. I've done some bad things. But for me, as far as grading and looking at, you know, how I look at a season and how I did, is finishing plays, doing my assignment, and always just playing as hard as I can. So if I'm on film loafing, or anything like that, I know I didn't do the right things off the field that week, or, you know, I didn't get enough sleep or stuff like that. So it's just the little things that bother me, you know, missing a sack by not reaching, or, you know, waiting too long to reach, or little things like that. So, you know, I just got to keep doing my job, playing 100 miles an hour, and, you know, the plays and stats that everyone loves to see, that'll definitely come.
You're the best!
It's my man right there.
It's a perfect way to end it, Max.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for the time. Best of luck against the Bengals and
Absolutely.
The rest of the year.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for downloading and listening to the Raiders Talk podcast, and a special shout out to Max Crosby for taking time to discuss how a kid with only one college offer became an NFL impact player so quickly and where he goes from here. You can see this interview televised on Raiders Central with me and Kelly Johnson, which airs on NBC Sports Bay Area and NBC Sports California leading up to Sunday's game against the Cincinnati Bengals. You've been listening to the Raiders Talk podcast, and if you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play to subscribe. If you like our podcast, give us a rating and a review. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCSAuthentic, and we will be back next week with another great guest. Thanks for listening, Raider Nation.
Raiders Insider Podcast on NBC Sports California.com.